This is Women of Grace Live, discussing issues important to your life and faith. Spiritual insight, practical wisdom. Join us as we transform the world one woman at a time. Women of Grace, for such a time as this. Now, here's your host, Johnette Williams.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Women of Grace Live. I am Johnette Williams. We're happy to be with you today. We certainly are. You know that this time, Monday through Friday, is a time that we set aside and ask God to imbue it with the power of the Holy Spirit and to enrich us and to help for us to live that abundant life in our Lord Jesus Christ and to share that abundant life with others. We typically invite you to give us a call at this time, but nope, not today. Today, we have a special guest with us, Dr. Carrie Gress. Is with us, and we're going to be talking about toxic femininity and our Blessed Lady and how our Blessed Mother is calling us as her daughters to enter into this holy army to help change the way in which the world is headed and to be those inspirations that come in the midst of the chaos and the fray to speak a word of truth. It's all in preparation for an upcoming two-part Benedicta Enrichment Seminar that is going to be held online January 28th and 29th between 7:30 p.m. Eastern and 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern. And Dr. Carrie Gress is going to be the one who is taking us through this two-part journey of discovery with regard to authentic femininity and the guidance that is ours. And may I say the maternal impact that can be ours through our Blessed Lady. So we are going to be talking about all kinds of things today, and I'm very, very eager to get started. But I want to share with you just a few things about the webinar, and I want to share a few things with you about Dr. Carrie Gress. The title of the webinar is Conquering Toxic Femininity with Mary, Mother of God. As I mentioned to you, Dr. Carrie Gress is our presenter. I gave you the dates, January 28th and 29th, between 7:30 p.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time, both evenings. There will be opportunities for you to ask questions of Dr. Carrie Gress as we move towards the close of each of those evenings. We generally find that this is quite beneficial for those who attend. Not only does it make it interactive, but I think that it also helps for individuals to deepen their understanding of the importance that each one of us has, because every question that you ask is a question that's important to you, but it's also a question important to somebody else. I'm pretty certain of that. And we're going to be talking about the way that generations of women have truly been misled by radical feminists, their anti-life agenda, their anti-marriage agenda, their anti-family agenda, and really, you know, an anti-Mary agenda. And I'm not really quite sure that a lot of those women would see it that way. But any time that we come against the goal that God has in mind for women, we rub up against the beautiful, beautiful reality of our Blessed Lady. And if we're working against God's desire for woman, we are working against the ideal woman, our mother. And so there really is an anti-Mary movement that is implicit within the radical feminist agenda. And, you know, we know that this kind of toxic environment, this kind of toxic ideology has destroyed the lives of many, many women, and in so doing, destroyed the lives of many men and also children, inclusive of the children in the womb. So we want to talk about ways in which we, as women, can enter into the midst of this fray and through our own witness and example and conversion of life and heart, become, if you will, mini Marys in the world today that are presenting the true ideal of woman that God has implicitly given to us and trusted to us by way of our feminine gender. So we're going to be talking about the roots of this toxic femininity. We're going to be talking about how the anti-Marian spirit pervades and influences every aspect of our culture, which is really very, very true. And we're going to talk about the antidote to that, living the Marian option. And we're going to be talking about how Mary has historically helped mankind, what the age of Mary is all about. Are we in the age of Mary? And if we are, what are the keys to restoring civilization to Christ according to this age of Mary? And then, you know, this Marian option, what is it truly? And what does it mean? how does that impact upon the way in which we live our own individual lives, but also the way in which we live our life in our families, how our family lives its life together as a community, a domestic church, and how it is that through our daily lives, this Marian option begins to make a difference. I'll tell you what, it's going to be absolutely fantastic, and we have got the presenter to provide it to us. Carrie has a doctorate in philosophy from the Catholic University of America. She's editor of the Helena Daily. She's a faculty member at Pontifex University and a member of the International Marian Association, regular contributor to Catholic publications, radio and television. We've had her on the air a number of times, both television and radio. She's worked and lived professionally in D.C. and in Rome, Italy, and her work has been translated into 9 languages. She's authored several books, including the 2 that form the backbone of this 2-part Benedicta Enrichment Seminar, The Marian Option and the Anti-Mary Exposed. They're published by TAN, and I want you to know that they're available for you at EWTN's Religious Catalog. That's EWTNRC.com. We're going to be sharing more with you about those books and the way in which you can get those books through EWTNRC.com as we move through our program together. And on top of all of that, get this, Carrie is a homeschooling mother of 4 children, and she and her family live in Virginia. So, you know, here we are. We've got a woman who is highly accomplished to be our seminar presenter. We have a woman who is living a family life today, giving of herself in so many ways. She's an author, brilliant speaker and presenter. And yet she sees in the midst of all of this that there is a call to be this authentic witness to the image of our Blessed Lady in the world today. And she's doing it, you know. Just reading her bio and sharing it with you right this moment, I'm thinking to myself, oh my goodness, this is the Proverbs lady. You know, she's doing it all, but she's doing it all for God, and she's doing it all according to His holy will. And we know we need to learn how to do exactly that, or to fine-tune it. We all need to be fine-tuned, no matter how much we are dedicated to the call and the mission that God's given to us by way of our feminine person. You know, we all need to fine-tune it. We're going to find out the ways in which we can do that as we go through this enrichment seminar, January 28th and 29th from 7:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. But we're also going to get tidbits of that through the course of our time together today. And I'm excited about the program. I'm excited to talk about this topic. I live my life for this reality. That's what Women of Grace is all about. And I know that we are all going to be enriched by what we hear and what it is that we are going to be able to witness together through the 2-part Benedicta Enrichment Seminar that we will be holding January 28th and 29th. I also want to mention to you that in addition to the 2 book titles that I shared with you earlier, The Marian Option and The Anti-Mary Exposed, Carrie also is co-author of 2 additional books, The Theology of the Home and Theology of the Home 2. These are beautiful books. I'm telling you what, these are beautiful. The content is beautiful in terms of what's given to us in the text, but the imagery in the book is beautiful. And we're going to be talking about all of it when we come back from our break. So I'm asking you to stay with us. Dr. Carrie Gress is with us. No calls today. Want to make you aware of that. We're going to be spending our whole time with Dr. Carrie Gress talking about these most important topics. But I do want to let you know, you can email questions to us that perhaps we will be able to use in our webinar that's coming up on January 28th and 29th. And you can email them to womenofgrace@ewtn.com. womenofgrace@ewtn.com. We're going to be right back with Dr. Carrie Gress following the break, inviting you to stay with us. Welcome back, friends. You're listening to Women of Grace Live. I'm Johnette Williams, and we have Dr. Carrie Gress with us today. Very excited that she is going to be presenting at our 2-part Benedicta Enrichment Seminar, which is going to be held online January 28th and 29th, 7:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time is the time period that we will be coming together. Do want to let you know that you can register right online at our website, womenofgrace.com. Simply go to womenofgrace.com. www.womenofgrace.com. You're going to see it listed in the events that are on the left-hand side of the homepage there. Scroll on down, get to those events, click on the one that is talking about this upcoming webinar. It'll take you to a landing page that gives you a whole lot of information about it, gives us Dr. Carrie's bio as well. But there's an online opportunity for registration there too. So we want you to click on that and fill it out and join us. It's going to be just an absolutely beautiful two-evening experience. It's going to inform you. I think it's going to heal you. I think it's going to set you free. I think that it's going to inspire you. And I think that it's really going to rev you up. And I liked revved up women for the cause of God's honor and glory and the great cause that we have now to return this culture to a right and proper understanding of the feminine person. Carrie, welcome to Women of Grace today. It's grand to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that glowing introduction. My goodness. The one correction I would make is I now have 5 kids.
That's right.
I have a boy back in February. So, yes, we've got a new addition to the family.
Well, it's so very exciting. And I remember when you were with us at Malvern and you had just discovered, you know, just weeks before that you were with child. And it was so beautiful. And it was so, it was just absolutely, you know, what it is like at that moment of gestation. And you said, now at any given point, you said, I'm 6 weeks pregnant. And at any given point in time, I might cry. And then later on in the midst of talking with us about toxic femininity, so moved by the topic itself and so affected by the destruction that it's caused, you did start to cry and you said to all of us, see, I told you this could happen. And we all cried with you.
That's so sweet. That was an amazing weekend.
It truly was. And I think that we've got an amazing two evenings coming up here, January 28th and 29th from 7:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern time out there online for this presentation. I'm so glad that you are a voice for sanity in this world of insanity right now, especially as we talk about the feminine person. And you're a doctor of philosophy. So, you know, just take us now into the metaphysical reality of woman. You know, let's talk a little bit about this from that perspective.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first thing I want to say is I am so excited about this event. Last summer, I guess, I discerned with my spiritual director that I just needed to take a step away from doing any kind of talks and events. We just had so much on our plate with the baby and our online magazine and store, and it was just too much. I just needed a break from it. And so this is really the first big thing I've done since before the baby was born almost. So I'm just thrilled to be talking about it. And of course, you know what it's like when you have that time away, you know, new ideas come to you and there's new excitement and joy and insights. So I just can't wait to share some of this new content with your audience and the old content too, because I think it's still so relevant and even more relevant now that we're facing this new administration. We've got our work cut out for us. So I just can't wait. But the metaphysical reality of women, I mean, let's start with a big question, John.
Why not?
So absolutely. So metaphysical is just a fancy word for what the being of women and, the human nature of womanhood. And I think that this is a really big question because we so misunderstand what it means to be a woman now. We've spent 50 years telling women that they need to be like men. And so we have a lot of confusion. In fact, I wrote an article, it was 200 words for Magnificat a few months back. And I was amazed at how much of a response I got from people because they'd never read anything about this, on women. And all it did in those, 200 words, very short paragraphs, was just talk about how women contain things. You can see that in our bodies. You see, we have wombs to carry babies. We have these arms that are bent slightly differently than men so that we can cradle a baby more easily. We have all these different ways that we do that in our bodies, but we also do that in our souls. But we don't just carry people, we improve them. We gift them with things because of our own gifts that God's given us. And I think that was one of the funnest parts of the research that I did for the Anti-Mary Exposed was looking into this concept, because it's not, you know, I didn't make this up, but it actually goes back to all this ancient Greek mythology and all these different areas. Even it's built into our language, especially the Romance languages. You can see that things like a ship, it's a feminine word in Romance languages. The ocean, which of course carries and moves things, is a feminine word. Even, you know, the ship example is great, because if you look at the church, of course, the church is always called she. And the nave of the church, that main part where people sit, that refers to ship. The word navy comes from that. So there's all these different ways in which we see the feminine expressed, and it's gorgeous. And yet we don't talk about it because we've made men an ideal. We have kind of a schizophrenic relationship with men, I think, as women, or at least the culture is pushing this on us, where women are supposed to become more like men, and men are supposed to change to become more like women. So it's this weird cycle that we've created. And out of that, of course, you know, all of this ideology has really lent itself to the LGBT movement as well. So it's the same ideology. It's just moving us further down the road of confusion to connect all these dots. But I think getting back to this idea of really seeing that the women have this very unique calling, and there's this gorgeous quote, and I'm going to butcher the quote, I'm sure, by Edith Stein, that where she says, you know, women are created to shelter souls, to provide a place for them to grow and be who they are. And I think that's one of these deep desires that women have. But we just, you know, when we hear it, we're like, yes, that makes sense. I know that feeling. And yet we haven't had that really underscored or even communicated to us in beautiful ways. So that's one of the things I really want to dive into more deeply, is just talking about what it means to be a woman. And, you know, we also have this dynamic of being told how we're supposed to be powerful and in control. And this is the message, you know, over and over again, we get day in and day out, all day long. And yet we're really called to be fruitful. And that is a word that I think is really misunderstood, because, again, we haven't heard it, we don't understand it, and we don't know how to place ourselves within that context. So I'm going to obviously unpack that a little bit more, but I think fruitfulness is one of those concepts that we can't really even understand Our Lady without understanding fruitfulness. We talk about the fruit of her womb, Jesus, every time we say the Hail Mary. So even understanding that in our own lives, I think, helps us understand who the Blessed Mother is, too. So it's a really beautiful thing to start digging into this, especially because it feels new, because we haven't been talking about these things for so long.
Yeah, you know, you're so right. And I feel as though, you know, I could replay this whole answer that you've given to us today, and sit and contemplate it and meditate on it and unpack it, you know, both intellectually as well as interiorly in my heart and soul, because there's so much there. And it brings two thoughts into my mind that I'm going to put out there, Carrie, and see what you think about this. But, you know, first of all, we're living in a time where we think that these metaphysical realities, the nature of who we are as men, the nature of who we are as women, is something that can be manipulated based on what we do with our bodies. And that's, nothing could be further from the truth, because that's an immutable reality about us. We cannot change our gender. You know, we can pretend that we're changing our gender, but we're living an illusion, and we're a little delusionary to think that we can even do that, because our DNA defines us. It tells us who we are in our essence, and we're always ordered to that. Even if it's a disordered expression of it, we are always ordered to it. So we set up an interior conflict within ourselves. And nobody can live in a conflict for very long, which is why I think we look at people that are transgendered, we look at individuals who are living out a gay lifestyle, whether they be male or female, and we see that the incidence of domestic violence is higher in that population, drug abuse higher in that population, alcoholism higher in that population, depression and other mental disorders higher in that population, and suicide higher in that population. Mm-hmm. Because we can't exist in a state of conflict. And so we are conflicting ourselves with who we truly are. The other comment that I want to make, and these are separate, and you can tease these out and talk about them whichever way you want to today. But the other thought that came to my mind is this concept of woman. And that when you talked about, you know, woman brings the giftedness out. She finds the gift. This is why, you know, Edith Stein talks about this business of finding a home in the heart of woman. Woman has a capacity to be able to hold out to another that which is central and most deeply interior to that person. And we see that right away at the dawn of human civilization with Adam and Eve. Adam, you know, at the first sighting of our Eve, as he comes out of his sleep, says, "At last, this is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh," and he's stating it right there. I know who I am because of you. But even the way in which she's taken from the side of man, she's taken from the interiority of the man, and crafted by God into this new being. She takes his interior and holds it up in the exterior for him to see who it is that he is, who, what his gifts are, what his talents are. And she leads and directs him in that way. She can lead him, you know, to great things, which is the call. We see this in the new Eve, our Blessed Lady, in the fulfillment of her son's mission. She's sending him off in that direction and attending to him the whole way through it, even unto his death. And we see Eve herself leading Adam to destruction. So woman has a choice to make here, but nonetheless, you know, the truth of who she is, the essence of her nature, is to be this woman who is fruitful, but is also fruitful by making other people fruitful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's start with the easy questions, Janet. these are great insights, and I'll start with the second one first.
Okay.
This idea of women having this deep capacity to lead people to heaven or to hell. I think that it's one of those things that once you see it, you sort of can't unsee it, and recognize kind of what's happening. Because we know that human nature is a constant, so that when it's disordered, we're going to see division and breakup, and we're going to see this conflict between men and women aggravated and exacerbated and widened. There's going to be more problems the more sinful that we are. And the contrast, of course, and I love the example. I have a picture of John Paul II and Mother Teresa that I keep on my computer that I just adore. You see what happens between men and women when they honor each other, and when the woman is working within her nature and the man is working within his ordered nature. The relationships are stronger and deeper and beautiful and edifying. And so I think that that's an important piece of that. But I think because we have this capacity to lead others to heaven and through the complementarity of male and female, this is really why human nature has been so targeted. And we see, you know, this isn't new to our culture. This is actually started with, this is, you know, Marxism 101. Mm-hmm. And we can see this in spades. This is what the Soviets did, was they erased basically genders within their culture. They put children in schools. They took them away from the family so that the mothers could work. Abortion was on hand for anybody who wanted one. You know, you couldn't own a piece of land, but you could have an abortion any day of the week. So it was really this effort at getting rid of male and female and sort of making these ideal workers very productive. Again, that idea of power and control. And yet the irony, of course, is that they had no control. They had no power over their own lives other than, you know, getting an abortion. That was kind of it. Because they couldn't own property. They couldn't choose their jobs. All of these things that we take for granted in our own culture just simply didn't exist in the Soviet bloc. And that's what we see elsewhere in other places that have adopted communism. I think that this is the problem we're seeing is this manifestation of it in our own culture, where human nature is very definitely being targeted. And much of that even has to do with birth control. I mean, this is a fascinating piece that I don't think we talk about enough. But if you, again, here's that word control, but if you make a woman sterile, suddenly the complementarity and the fruitfulness of the husband and wife is no longer on the table. It doesn't matter anymore. So sexuality just becomes a matter of pleasure. It doesn't have anything to do with children. And so therefore it becomes very interchangeable. And that's what we're seeing in the culture now is people don't have any concept of this complementarity and fruitfulness of womanhood. So it just seems like an unimportant, you know, sort of trifling detail. It's only important when you want to have children or start a family. So it's fascinating to me to see how much this has taken root in the whole culture and now is expressing itself in this, you know, very fluid sense of sexuality that we're seeing. And we're also seeing it promoted in abundance. So all of this, is really targeting this concept of human nature and what it means to be a man and what it means to be a female and trying to erase them the way that it happened under the Soviet communism, but with a lot more money behind it, a lot more flash, a lot more, trying to make it attractive to people. And of course, as you mentioned, you get into the details of it and it's ugly. You've got so much pain, so much sorrow, so much brokenness from people that are living this lifestyle because there's nothing in it that can properly feed them, their souls, because it's so disordered. So yeah, the issues are definitely woven together. I think you framed it well.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I have some thoughts on what you just said, and it's hard to figure this out, what comes first, the chicken or the egg here. But, when you're talking about communism and you're talking about socialism and the whole philosophy that supports that, and you're giving us, I mean, it's almost frightening to see the truth of it all in the sense that you are highlighting for us those key pieces of a socialistic philosophy. You're listing for us those key pieces of what it was actually like during the Bolshevik Revolution and the communist takeover of Russia, when you talk about this desire to wipe out the difference between men and women, to sterilize women, to pull children away from their parents at very early ages and to put them into government settings such as daycare centers and schools, to make abortion available on demand, to try to repudiate church teaching and actually to crush the church, and we look at that and we see that so much of that is part of this radical feminist agenda. What came first, in the transferring of this culture, which we're seeing happening right now? More with our guest, Dr. Carrie Gress, following our break today. Eager to get into the second half of our show. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, friends. You're listening to Women of Grace Live. I'm Johnette Williams. Today, however, we're not taking phone calls. Just want to let you know that. We have Dr. Carrie Gress with us. We're talking about really serious issues today in light of the upcoming two-part Benedicta Enrichment Seminar that's going to be held online January 28th and 29th from 7:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We're certainly hoping that you're going to sign up and join because we're going to have an opportunity not only to get more deeply into some of the issues that we're talking with Dr. Gress about today, but we're also going to have an opportunity for you to ask questions of her and to get answers to the things that are most pressing on your heart with regard to the feminine person and what we see happening to femininity in our world today. The title of this beautiful upcoming two-part Benedicta Enrichment Seminar is Conquering Toxic Femininity with Mary, Mother of God. It is going to be insightful. I think it's going to be outrageously helpful, and I know it's going to give you a deep desire to discover more about who you are as a woman, as well as how it is that our Blessed Mother desires to impact you with her spiritual motherhood. Do want to say this, it's primarily for women because it's on a woman's topic, but gentlemen, that doesn't mean you can't join us. I mean, this is a fascinating issue, period. And I know that it applies to you as much as it applies to women because you experience the consequences of toxic femininity. Get around a toxic woman who has been really imbued with the ideology of radical feminism, and you know that your life is not an easy life. And I got to tell you, Carrie, I get phone calls from men very frequently here, often enough on the air, where they tell us about how their wife has become a victim of the thought of toxic femininity, to what radical feminism puts out there, and how their lives have become, and truly, I say this not in a cussing fashion, it's become a living hell. They don't know what to do, and they are at wit's end with trying to bring some kind of balance and restoration into the household. The anger that is thrust at them, the confusion of behaviors, they really don't know what to do with it. So, gentlemen, I just want to say this will be very, very insightful and educational for you too. So, again, that's January 28th and 29th, 7:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. both evenings with Dr. Carrie Gress, Conquering Toxic Femininity with Mary, Mother of God. So we were talking about a whole lot of stuff there, Carrie, before we went to the break. and you know, we kind of teased about the fact that, you know, these issues are very important to us, and these issues are ones that, though they're difficult to talk about, have to be talked about. So I want to share just a little bit about what we were discussing towards the tail end there. And as you were describing what socialism, what communism instigated back at its very beginnings, and what it's instigated in every geographic location where it's taken root, it brought a thought into my mind. So much of this radical feminist ideology is living out, a real communist mindset, at least with regard to the human person. And so, you know, we look at where we are really as a nation. And we're tending in that direction. There is no question about it whatsoever. And it's almost as if, you know, 50 years ago, radical feminism became this big issue. And in a certain way, it's kind of groomed women for this moment. But then again, you know, the converse of that is that this mindset is also helping to establish this as the way in which we culturally experience our life in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I think the word grooming is not at all too strong. I think that's exactly what has been going on for the last 50 years. And when you mention these men who are talking about their wives, I have so much sympathy for them. And I think that the real problem is there's basically been kind of a media blackout of anything other than radical feminism when it comes to women's content. And I talk about this a great deal in the book, Anti-Mary Exposed. If you look at politics, if you look at Hollywood, if you look at the fashion industry, even book publishing, I've had friends who couldn't get books published by the big publishers because their books are pro-life. They will not veer from this radical feminist voice or narrative that's set out there. And it's actually kind of funny when you see it, because you realize it's 50 years old. You know, they've been using these same sound bites for 50 years. You know, grandmothers, mothers, and now daughters are using the exact same sound bites. And it's very anti-science at this point. It's almost a little bit silly when you start digging into it, but it's deadly. That's what's so sad about it. And we haven't done a good job of providing an alternative voice to that, such that these women can find it. I think because the narrative has done such an amazing job of saying anybody that disagrees with us is a doormat or an idiot. And I think that that's where we really need to start pushing back some more and engaging the culture, because things like magazines, for example, have been hugely influential upon women. And there's 35 million Catholic women in America, and we don't have a single magazine that represents the church teaching or anything like it. And so it's interesting to see where these gaps are that we could fill in more and do more to help women find their voice and to find an alternative to this narrative, to just know that it exists. But because of that, that's why we have so many women who are just so confused. And, you know, at Christmas Mass this year, I sat behind four women who looked very uncomfortable. They were dressed in the nines. They were probably in their 20s. Gorgeous women. And I just thought, you know, these women, as I was listening to the homily, it was our priest did an amazing job of comparing it to marriage and whatnot. And there was just this impermeableness around them. They just had no capacity to absorb what the priest was saying. And I think that this has been the fruit of it in the culture, is that women don't realize that they are meant to be receptive of God and to know what God is offering them at Mass. And I think that this is what we see, especially among Catholic women, and this is an area where we can really push out and start telling women, you know, God has so much for you and wants to gift you with so much. And we just have to break through, find new ways to break through that. But that's really the main reason why we struggle so much with this, is there's just no, there's no off ramp, you know, for women to find a different narrative to understand. Even, you know, you've got Hollywood starlets talking about how they had no idea there was even a pro-life argument. They just never heard it. And so many women experience that. So there's a lot that we can do, but a lot to pray for. But I think that we can also have great hope, because this is compelling. People, when they hear it, it's life-changing.
It is, you know, and we see that all of the time through the work that we do through Women of Grace, you know, and what goes on in our study groups with women. And oftentimes, you know, we get women who are broken, who come in, and sometimes they don't even realize they're broken. They come in because a friend said, oh, come to this, or whatever the case may be. But they begin to hear the truth being spoken, and they begin to see these disparate parts of their own being. And they want to, they want this integration. They want this totality of who they've been called to be. To be restored. And it happens, and it happens through the dynamic of the Holy Spirit. It happens through the intercession of our Blessed Lady. And it can happen, and it can happen for any one of you listening today. I mean, if any of the words that you're hearing today are striking your heart and you know, beginning to take the scales from your eyes because you have been trained up in the way you should go by the culture rather than trained up in the way you should go by what God's vision of woman is all about, you need to know that there's hope. And no matter what has taken place in your life, no matter what it might be, no matter how you've led your life, no matter if you've had an abortion, no matter if you've been in a same-sex relationship, it doesn't matter. God's mercy is everlasting, and He wants for this to be the beginning of a brand new day, a brand new life, a renewed life, renewed according to His holy plan for you, for His mission for you, which is tremendous and which is great. And I'm reminded of that beautiful quote. As a matter of fact, we have it on the website where we've got all of the information about this upcoming webinar. And friends, all you need to do is to go to womenofgrace.com and to click on the offering of the two-part Benedictine Enrichment Seminar, Conquering Toxic Femininity with Mary, Mother of God, listed underneath our events section there on the homepage. It'll take you to a landing page. You'll be able to register there. You'll be able to see what's going on that night, etc. But there's a quote that you'll see, and this is by Venerable Fulton Sheen. To a great extent, the level of any civilization is the level of its womanhood. And this is true. And this is why it's so important, Carrie, you know, that this off-ramp, as you phrase it, is provided and women can see the other side. But we've got a mighty work to do, because these radical feminism, you know, there's two ways to storm a castle. You can storm it from the outside, or you can infiltrate the castle and take it from the inside. We've been taken from the inside, you know, academia, from the time our little ones are wee small, you know, government schools are training them up in this false concept of who woman is. So we've got a mighty work in front of us, girlfriend. I'm just saying.
Oh, don't I know it. Yeah, no, that is absolutely the case. And yet, I come back to the hope that I have about this, because why is it that the church is being so targeted? Why is it that the ideas of the church are being targeted? It's because this really is the truth. This really is the best thing that's ever happened to women. And I was chastised by somebody recently for saying that, because, you know, the church is in some pretty big mess at this point with a lot of issues. And yet the church is the one that has had the constant voice that has said women have equal dignity to men, and that idea really blossomed, especially because of Our Lady. It certainly started with Christ, but because of devotion to her, that's really where it blossomed. And so it's ironic that women hate the church. They have this hatred for the church that's been sown because of all this propaganda, and it's largely because, you know, Satan doesn't want us finding the church and finding the truth and finding God and Christ and the Holy Spirit that have the capacity to heal our souls and to make us incredibly happy and joyful. So I think that that's, you know, if you look at the other side of the tapestry, you can see, well, why has the church been so crippled and attacked? And it's precisely for this reason. Again, if you get the woman, you get everybody. And this is what Satan knew from the beginning. This is why he targeted Eve, and because he knew her influence. And so it's very exciting to think about what can happen if we can reach a few women, because we have this ability to create a ripple effect with our own love. And you see this, you know, throughout church history, think of all these amazing saints that it wasn't just their life and their influence stopped to themselves, but, you know, someone like St. Monica, we would never have a St. Augustine if St. Monica hadn't spent all those years on her knees praying for her son. You can see St. Lucy, St. Cecilia. It's they influence their husbands. They influence their children. They influence the whole sphere of people around them. And that's really what we are called to do is, you know, this isn't just for us. It soaks in and seeps in, and then we are gifted with the capacity to give it to others and spread it very, very easily through our compassion, through our listening ears, through our relationships and the rich relationships that we have. So I think it's dark, but also a lot of hope in terms of just even changing the heart of one woman can change the whole world. Truly.
Yeah. Well, you're so absolutely right, you know, and I have a little acronym for hope, and this is the theological virtue that we all need to be really allowing ourselves to cooperate with at this moment in the history of man. But the H stands for hold on to the truths of the faith. The O is own the challenge. The P is persevere in prayer and patience. And the E is expect God to intervene. And, you know, if we're living, it's this pretty good little acronym. If we're living that
out. I'm going to write that down.
Well, if we're living that out every day, you know, then we find that our spirit rises, you know, and we don't become we don't become depressed or dissuaded, disillusioned. You know, we become really invigorated and we set out, you know, with a new goal every day. And as far as the church goes, it is true. Two thoughts came to me when you said that. One, maybe this is a poor analogy, but I'm going to use it. You take a body that's under attack by a terrible cancer, right? In no way does that negate the body. In no way does it negate the value of the human person, right? It remains, but the enemy that's attacking it, that cancer, is what is vile. And it's the same with the church. The church herself, you know, has great integrity. The church herself, has great dignity. The church herself is beautiful and wonderful, but it's the cancer that's attacking it. And the evil one, of course, is the cause of this disease that's attacking the church right now. And we have to see that. And somehow in our minds be able to separate that out, you know. And the other thing that occurs to me is how beautiful and wonderful it is. I mean, just think about this. You know, God in his omniscient gaze knew what we would be facing at this moment in time. And so he raises up St. John Paul II, a brilliant man with keen insight, philosopher, right? Keen insight into the greater realities, and he gives us the theology of the body, and he becomes a champion, an absolute champion for women. And you know, why? Because God knew we would need that right this moment, and we do. And we've got to avail ourselves of the power of that.
Well, and I think that brings up a great point, too, just about how God gives us the saints that are needed for an age. You can see this in, you know, St. Benedict shows up when Rome's crumbling. He's like, well, we got it covered. We got monasteries. We're taking care of all the civilization and protecting it and the core of the truth and expanding upon that through the monastic system. You can see it with St. Francis, you know, the church is being choked with riches and he comes along and is very, very poor. So I think that is what we're seeing in the culture today, too, is we need to be that antidote to the women that are corrupting the culture. We need to be the response to that. And I think it's exciting, too, even just looking at, you know, I think we can get weighed down thinking we have to change the whole mass of women. And yet we can see historically that there is such a thing called the creative minority. And I talk about this in the Marian Option, that it's a small group of people that can transform a civilization or restore it. And that has been something that's been very, very hopeful to me. When I look at sort of the majority of the population of our country, and see just how far they are from it because of the embrace of this anti-Marian idea. And yet so much can be done with a small group of people that get it and that are living out a fruitful and faithful expression of the faith. And that's, again, what's happened is people have been faithless to the church, and that's why we're seeing this corruption. It's not because there's something wrong with the church. It's because the people aren't following what the church teaches, and that's why we've had this corruption. So if we are the antidote to that and really live out what the church teaches, then we have this pocket of wellness, you know, back to your analogy of of cancer. There's the tumor's not going to fester in that part of the body because we've blocked it. So I love that analogy, John, and I'm going to use that.
Well, you're quite welcome to. You know, you talk about in the anti-Mary Exposed, you know, that the women who were the prime movers of the radical feminism, and it was, and you talk about the influence that a small group can have. Well, here's an example of the influence that a small group of women had for the negative. It was just a small group of women that started this radical feminist agenda. And but when you tell us about them, it's very clear that every one of them had a terrible mother wound. And so, you know, this is one of the reasons why I think women who are radical feminists absolutely hate the church. You know, their goal is really not to change the church. Their goal is to crush the church. Their goal is to kill the church. Yeah. And it's also one of the reasons why women who have had, you know, what do I want to say, have in a way fallen victim to radical feminism, have difficulty with our Blessed Mother, because the mother wound is so great. So I want you to talk with us a little bit about that.
Yeah, no, this was one of the tragic things that I saw when I was doing the research, was just, you know, you've got these core group of women. And, you know, one of the desires that all women have is to do good, to do, you know, that we want to help other people. And this was really apparent in this group of women. They just didn't know how to do it. They just thought, they thought that, you know, taking their friends to go get an illegal abortion was going to be, was a good thing. They thought that destroying the church was a good thing. They, you know, all of these things they just had backwards, and that backwardsness came because of their early childhood experiences of it, and hating their mothers. You know, the stories that, and a lot of them are in the book, but the stories are just awful. They, you know, they'll make you cry when you think of these little girls and the things that they experienced because their mothers didn't know how to love them properly. And that redounds, that extends, you know, until it's healed, that's going to extend into the world. And this is why we're seeing so much pain in the culture, I think, because those, that, you know, broken people break people. And so we see just this generational sin happening over and over and over again. And yet this is what needs to be healed. And so rather than saying, you know, these are broken women, how do we help them? We've actually turned that into a virtue, you know, this toughness and this soul that sort of can endure, but it's also kind of wrapped in anger and bitterness and bullying. That's another aspect of it, is just the amount of silencing and bullying that happens within this context of radical feminism. So it's really sad because this, again, it's all born of brokenness, but it's connected with this desire to do something good. But that desire in and of itself has been so manipulated and distorted that they can't possibly do the right thing. And that's been shared and spread, and, you know, we see that all over the place. So it's incredibly sad that that's really where it starts, is just this little girl that's broken. And then she finds others who are like her in their brokenness, and she feels kind of affirmed in that. And as I'm saying this, you can also see this in the LGBT movement, you know, especially with young boys who have been broken or abused with the deeper father wounds. It's the exact same pattern. And they find others, and you have this, you know, coming out excitement and that whole experience where they sort of feel affirmed by others who have the same brokenness. So it's very sad to see it just kind of blow through the culture and us, all of us sort of not knowing what to do, because either we don't see a problem with it or we do see a problem, but we don't know how to respond to it. But it's this exact same ideology.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of work that we have to do, and I just know that this is the time for it. And so if it's God's time for the healing to begin, then we know that the graces are there. So none of us should be disheartened, but rather we should be heartened by the fact that God's given us life at this moment to do something about all of these things that seem as though we will never overcome them. But You know, David overcame Goliath with just one little stone, and we can do the same if we stand together. Well, Carrie, it's been wonderful having you with us today. I am so, so very looking forward to being with you January 28th and 29th, 7:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time for our two-part Benedicta Enrichment Seminar online, Conquering Toxic Femininity with Mary, Mother of God. Our guest is going to be Dr. Carrie Gruss. You've been listening to her all day, friends. I know that you're going to want to sign up, so go to womenofgrace.com. Click on that event that gives you the title of this event, and you can register right there. Carrie, it's been great. Thank you so very much. And we want to send everybody to EWTN's religious catalog, EWTNRC.com. Carrie's books are available for you there, The Anti-Mary Exposed, The Marian Option, and Theology of the Home, Part 1 and 2, or first and second volumes. We're looking forward to being with you, Carrie. God bless you now. Thank you all for being with us. Bye-bye now.